bridge design spoke of a people who would never willingly put themselves at more risk than absolutely necessary. That's Nymoidians, all right. Cardass agreed. You could get that just from the bridge design? Architecture is merely another form of art, Thrawn reminded him. But even without those indications, the triple blast doors we passed through would have told me that these Nymoidians are not warriors. Which is why they have battle droids to fight for them, Cardass said. But isn't gunning us down exactly what cowards like that would do? Thrawn shook his head. Vice Lord Cav was too close to the line of fire. He would never have ordered the droidicas to attack. Cardass grimaced. A bluff. Or he was making a point, Thrawn said. These combat droids are a new concept to me, but one worth careful thought. He grimaced. I sincerely hope the Vagari haven't visited a world where they might have picked up such weapons. Outbound flight, Kento repeated, frowning off into space as he slowly shook his head. Nope, never heard of it.
Me neither, Maris seconded. And you say this Cav and Stratus want to destroy it?
Cav and whoever, Cardass said. Thrawn thinks Stratus is an alias. Fine, Cav and Master No One, Kento said impatiently. So why do they want to destroy it?
Cardass shrugged.
Stratus spun a big loop pastry about how dangerous the Jedi are and how they want to take over and make everyone to do things their way. But that has to be a lie. Not necessarily, Kento said. A lot of people out there are starting to wonder about the Jedi.
They're certainly helping to prop up the Coruscant bureaucracy, Maris pointed out. Anyone who wants genuine government reform will have to persuade the Jedi to change sides.
Or else kill them, Kento said.
So what do we do? Maris asked.
We do nothing, Kento said firmly. It's not our problem. You hear me? It's not our problem. If the Jedi are going to go flying off into the unknown regions, it's up to them to figure out how to protect themselves. It's up to us to figure out how to get ourselves out of here. That is, if you think you can drag yourself away from all this nobility and culture.
That's not fair, Maris protested, her eyes hard, even as a touch of pink colored her cheeks.
Whatever. Kento turned back to Cardass. You're his confidant these days, kid. You think you can sweet-talk him into letting us have that Vagari loot his brother locked away?
He jerked a thumb at Maris.
Or should I ask Maris to do it? Rack,
Maris began.
I don't think sweet-talk is going to be the issue, Cardass said hastily.
The tension between Kento and Maris was starting to drift into the red zone again. He can't give it to us unless his brother and Admiral Arulani both let him.
So how do we get Arulani back here? Maris asked.
We don't have to,
Cardass said grimly, glancing at his chrono. As a matter of fact, Thrawn's probably welcoming her onto the base right now.
Great, Kento said, brightening. Let's get our hearing, get our loot, and get out of here.
Cardass sighed. I'll do what I can. He left their quarters and started down the corridor.
Arulani's welcoming ceremony was probably over, but she and Thrawn were most likely still together, probably talking about Thrass's accusations.
Arulani hadn't struck him as the sort who would waste any more time with ceremonial niceties than necessary.
So you do have free run of the base.
Cardass turned. Thrass was coming up behind him, his expression giving no hint as to what was going on behind those glowing eyes.
Syndic Mithrasophis, Cardass greeted him. Forgive my surprise, I assumed you'd be with your brother and the Admiral.
Thrass inclined his head.
Come with me, please.
He turned and strode off down the corridor. Cardass followed. Thrass led the way to the upper level of the base, where Thrawn and the senior officers had their quarters. They passed a few warriors along the way, none of whom gave either the Syndic or the human so much as a curious glance, and finally arrived at a door marked with Chiyun symbols that Cardass couldn't quite decipher.
In there, Thrass said.
Bracing himself, Cardass stepped past him into the room.
He found himself in a small conference room with half a dozen computer-equipped chairs arranged in a circle around a central hologramic display. Seated on the far side of the circle, resplendent in her white uniform, was Admiral Aralani.
"Be seated, Kardas," she said in Chiyun, as Thras stepped into the room behind him.
"Thank you, Admiral," Kardas said in the same language as he took the seat directly across from her.
"Welcome back."
She nodded acknowledgement, studying him thoughtfully, as Thras sat down in the chair to her right.
"I understand you were with Commander Mithron Yuruodo on his last military venture. Tell us what happened."
Kardas glanced at Thras, back at Aralani. "First of all, it wasn't really an act of aggression," he said, picking his words carefully. "It was an expedition to investigate unknown warships that had been reported in the area. Vessels that wouldn't have been reported at all if Mithron Yuruodo wasn't already inclined to premature military action," Aralani pointed out. Beside her, Thras stirred in his seat.
"The expansionary fleet's charter does require observation and exploration in the regions around the Chiss Ascendancy."
"Observation and exploration," Aralani countered. "Not unprovoked military action."
She lifted her eyebrows.
"Or do you deny military action was taken and Chiss casualties sustained?"
Kardas frowned. "I was unaware that any Chiss warriors had been lost.
The Whirlwind did not return from the battle," Aralani said.
"Oh," Kardas said, breathing a little easier. "Of course. The missing cruiser was still at the battle scene, keeping the Darkvenge pinned down with the Vagari grab projector. But he obviously couldn't tell Aralani that.
I still maintain that Commander Mithron Yuruodo fought only in self-defense."
"Did the unknown enemy fire first?"
"The firing of weapons isn't always the first act of aggression," Kardas hedged. "The Trade Federation battleships launched a massive force of droid starfighters. I've read reports of battles in which these weapons were used, and if Commander Mithron Yuruodo hadn't acted to neutralize them, his force would quickly have been overwhelmed."
"Perhaps," Aralani said. "We'll know better once you've shown us around the battle zone."
Kardas felt his mouth go suddenly dry.
"Around the..." "You object?" Aralani demanded.
"Well, for starters, I don't even know where it is," Kardas said, stalling for time as he thought furiously. "If Aralani found the Darkvenge sitting out there..."
"The location isn't a problem," Aralani assured him, holding up a slender cylinder tapered at both ends. "I have the last 2 months' worth of the Springhawk's navigational data."
Kardas fought back a grimace.
"All right, but shouldn't we check first with Commander Mithron Yuruodo?" "We're going now, precisely because I don't want Commander Mithron Yuruodo to know about it," Aralani said. "I've sent him on a security sweep of the nearby systems, which should give us time to examine the battle zone and return."
Her eyes glittered.
"And only then will we ask for his version of the battle."
"Preparing for first target," Sibayeth said, his deep voice sounding strained as it resonated from the low ceiling of the weapons blister. "Firing now!"
His hands moved in an almost dreamlike way over the controls, and there was a flicker of indicator lights as one of Dreadnought One's sets of turbo lasers delivered a massive broadside blast. Standing near the blister's doorway, Obi-Wan stretched out to the Force. On the other side of the dreadnought, he could sense Lorana Jinsler also firing her turbo lasers, while all the way on the far side of outbound flight on Dreadnought 4, Maneen and the two Duros Jedi did the same.
"Wow,"
Anakin muttered at his side.
"That's intense."
"Yes," Obi-Wan agreed, eyeing Sibayeth closely. This was the Jedi Master's third meld today, and the strain of the procedure had to be getting to him. But if it was, Obi-Wan couldn't detect it in the other's face or sense. He'd always assumed that at least part of Sibayeth's unshakable confidence in himself was either an act or else a vast overestimation of his actual abilities. Now, for the first time, he began to wonder if the man might actually be as strong in the Force as he claimed.
Spotter Control, all Test 1 volleys on target, a voice reported from the comm panel.
Pretty good, Anakin muttered.
Very good, you mean, Obi-Wan said.
Can you sense any of Master Sabaoth's commands, or just the presence of the meld itself?
I don't know, Anakin said,
and Obi-Wan could sense the boy tightening his concentration.
Preparing for second target, Sabaoth announced.
Spotter control ready.
Firing now, Sabaoth said.
Again, the indicators flickered.
Target 2 hit, the spotter reported. 1 flyer.
What's a flyer? Anakin asked. It means one of the shots missed the target, Obi-Wan told him, frowning. There'd been something odd on that last shot, something he couldn't quite put his finger on. Stretching out again to the Force, this time focusing on the edges of the meld instead of on its center, he tried to track it down.
Preparing for third target, Sabaoth said. Firing now.
And this time, as the indicators once again flickered, Obi-Wan saw it. Sabaoth had set up a total of 6 targets in this exercise. Obi-Wan forced himself to wait until all 6 had been destroyed, the last 4 with as impressive an accuracy quotient as the first 2. The spotter delivered his final report, and with a shaking jerk of his head, Sabaoth broke the meld. For a few seconds he just sat there, blinking rapidly as the last tendrils of connection between him and his fellow Jedi dissolved completely away. Then, taking a deep breath, he exhaled a long sigh and turned to Obi-Wan and Anakin.
What did you think, Master Skywalker?
Very intense, Anakin said. I've never seen anything like it before. When can I try it?
Not until after you've completed your training, Sabaoth said. This isn't something Padawans should be fooling around with.
The star lines cleared away, and a small and distant red sun appeared in the Dark Venge's bridge viewports.
So?
Cav growled.
Patience, Vice Lord, Doriana advised, watching the blue-skinned alien standing beside the helm, peering at the small device in his hand.
Mithron Yoruido had left the technician behind to guide them to the location the Chiss commander had specified. A moment later, the tech gave a small nod and murmured a few words to the silvery TC-18 translator droid at his side.
He says, we're here, Vice Lord Cav,
the droid reported.
Cav sniffed.
Wherever here is.
Here is wherever Commander Mithron Yoruido wants us to be, Doriana said, not bothering to conceal his disgust with the other.
Then where is he?
Cav demanded.
2 incoming vessels,
the Nymoidian at the sensors called.
1 Chiss cruiser, 1 smaller vessel.
The Chiss tech spoke again in the Sibisti trade language.
They are the Springhawk and the long-range shuttle,
the TC droid announced primly.
Commander Mithron Yoruido will wish to board immediately.
Tell the commander his usual docking port has been prepared for him, Doriana said. A few minutes later, Mithron Yoruido strode through the blast doors onto the bridge, a pair of Chiss warriors trailing behind him.
Welcome aboard, Commander, Doriana said, rising from the couch.
Thank you,
Mithron Yoruido said.
I appreciate your swift compliance with my instructions.
As I told you earlier, we wish to be fully cooperative, Doriana reminded him.
Excellent, Mithron Yoruido said. I wish you to begin unloading your droid starfighters.
Cav jerked like he'd been kicked.
What do you say?
Your droid starfighters are to be transported to that asteroid.
Mithron Yoruido pointed out the viewports at a small, irregularly shaped crescent of faint light against the stars.
After that, I will require the services of those who program their combat movements.
Cav gurgled under his breath.
This is outrageous. I will not consent to...
Be silent, Doriana cut in, his eyes on Mithron Yoruido. You have a plan for dealing with outbound flight, don't you?
I have a plan,
Mithron Yoruido confirmed.
Whether or not I activate it depends on whether or not you're ready to tell me the truth.
An uncomfortable lump formed in Doriana's throat. Explain, please.
Your name is not Stratus, Mithron Yoruido said. You're not your own master, but answer to another. And the social threat posed by these Jedi is not the true reason you seek outbound flight's destruction. He lifted his eyebrows. If, indeed, you genuinely do seek its destruction.
What other reason would we have to be here? Doriana asked.
Perhaps your intent was to rendezvous with them,
Mithron Yoruido suggested.
If outbound flight is filled with warriors instead of colonists, together your combined forces would have had both the firepower and the personnel necessary to launch an effective bridgehead invasion.
I've already told you we're not here for conquest.
I know what you told me, Mithron Yoruido said. Now you must persuade me to believe it.
Of course, Doriana said. I believe I can answer all of your questions together. If you'll come with me, I'd like to introduce you to my superior. Deliberately, he looked at Cav. You, Vice Lord, will remain here. He didn't wait for Cav's inevitable protest, but set off across the bridge, leading Mithron Yoruido back to the office where they'd first conferred 2 days earlier. He ushered the Chiss inside and sealed the door. Doriana's special holoprojector was already hooked into the Dark Venge's comm system. Punching in the access code, he gestured Mithron Yoruido to the desk chair. Your first point is absolutely correct. My true name is Kinmen Doriana, an identity I've taken care to keep secret from Vice Lord Cav's crew and other associates.
You play mutually opposing roles, then?
Doriana stared. How did you know that?
It was obvious. Who are your two masters?
My official public master is Supreme Chancellor Palpatine, the head of the Republic government, Doriana said, the words echoing strangely in his ears. My true master is a Sith Lord named Darth Sidious.
A Sith Lord is...
A being who stands against the Jedi and their control of the Republic, Doriana explained.
Ah, Mithron Yoruido said. A power struggle.
In a way, Doriana conceded, but on a plane far different from the one where beings like you and I exist. What's important right now is that Lord Sidious has access to information sources the Jedi don't have.
And what do these sources tell him?
Doriana braced himself. There's an invasion coming. A massive assault force of dark ships, shadowy figures, and weapons of great power, based on organic technology of a sort we've never seen before. We believe these far outsiders, as we call them, already have a foothold at the far edge of the galaxy, and even now have scouting parties seeking information on worlds and peoples to conquer.
Stories of mysterious invaders are both convenient and difficult to disprove,
Mithron Yoruido pointed out.
Why do you only now tell me this?
Doriana nodded toward the door.
Because Vice Lord Cav and his associates don't know. Neither does anyone else in the Republic. Not yet.
When will Darth Sidious tell them?
When he's turned the Republic's chaos into order, Doriana said. When we've built an army and a fleet capable of dealing with the threat. To announce it before then would do nothing but create panic and leave us open to disaster.
How does outbound flight fit into all this?
As I said, we believe the far outsiders are currently still gathering information, Doriana said. So far, there's no indication that they even know about the Republic. He felt his throat tighten. Actually, that's not entirely true. He corrected himself reluctantly. One of the Jedi, a being named Verger, disappeared in that region some time ago. That's one of outbound flight's private agendas, in fact, to try to learn what happened to her.
I see,
Mithron Yoruido said, nodding slowly.
And while a single prisoner can give only hints of his or her origin, an entire shipful of them can provide all that would be needed for a successful invasion.
Exactly, Doriana said. Not to mention all the data files and technology they would be able to examine. If outbound flight blunders into their bridgehead, we could find ourselves facing an attack long before we're ready.
Above the holoprojector, the familiar hooded figure shimmered into view. The hologram was a bit more ragged than usual, Doriana noted, but the connection itself seemed more solid than he'd feared it would be. Sidious was evidently somewhere much closer than his usual haunts on Coruscant.
Report.
His unseen eyes seemed to catch sight of Mithron Yoruido, and the drooping corners of his mouth drooped a little farther.
Who is this?
This is Commander Mithron Yoruido of the Chiss Expansionary Defense Fleet, Lord Sidious. I'm afraid we've had a slight setback in our mission.
I don't wish to hear about setbacks, Master Doriana.
Yes, my lord, Doriana said, trying to stay calm. Let me explain.
He gave Sidious a summary of the one-sided battle with the Chiss. Somewhere during the explanation, Sidious's face turned from staring at him to staring at Mithron Yoruido.
Impressive,
he said when Doriana finished.
And only one of your ships survives.
Doriana nodded. And only because Commander Mithron Yoruido chose to leave it intact.
Most impressive, Commander Mithron Yoruido. I take it from your presence here that Master Doriana has explained the need to stop outbound flight before it passes beyond your territory.
He has, Mithron Yoruido confirmed. Have you proof of this impending alien threat?
I have reports. Master Doriana will detail them for you if you wish. Assuming you're convinced, what will be your response?
Mithron Yoruido's eyes flicked to Doriana. Assuming I'm convinced, I'll agree to Master Doriana's request to intercept and stop outbound flight.
Excellent. But be warned, the Jedi will not accept defeat lightly, and they have the power to reach across great distances to touch and manipulate the minds of others. You cannot allow them knowledge of your attack before it is launched.
I understand, Mithron Yoruido said. Thank you for your time, Lord Sidious.
I look forward to hearing the report of your victory.
Sidious sent a final look at Doriana, and with a flicker, the image was gone. For a long moment, Mithron Yoruido sat without speaking, his glowing eyes glittering with thought. I'll need a full technical readout on outbound flight and its component dreadnoughts. I trust you have current information, up to and including even the final passenger listings, Doriana assured him. Now that you know about Jedi power against living gunners, shall I cancel your order to remove our droid starfighters? Of course not, Mithron Yoruido said. And I'll also need 2 of your droidicas and 4 of your battle droids to be packed and loaded aboard my long-range shuttle for transport to my base. I presume that 6 droids can be controlled by something more portable than this vessel's computer? Yes, there are localized datapad systems that can handle up to 200 droids each, Doriana said, suppressing a grimace. I'll pack one in with the droidicas.
"14 vessels," Admiral Aralani declared, her glowing eyes sweeping the field of debris stretched out before them. "Possibly 13, if the 2 sections of wreckage to the right belong to a single vessel that broke apart before exploding."
"Is that the correct number, Cardass?" Thras asked.
"Yes, that sounds about right," Cardass agreed, his muscles wilting a little with relief. The 15th ship, the intact Trade Federation battleship, was nowhere to be seen. He just hoped that it was Thrawn who'd moved it, and that it hadn't managed to skip out on its own. Of course, I was just an observer. I didn't have access to the sensor information. Plus, there were a considerable number of those, Aralani continued,
pointing at the charred sections of two droid starfighters floating past the bridge canopy, too small to be staffed.
"They're mechanical devices called droids," Cardass said. "These in particular are called droid starfighters."
Thrass grunted. "If the field of battle is any indication of their combat abilities, I would say they're misnamed."
"Don't be misled by your brother's skill at warfare, Syndic Mithras Safis," Aralani warned. "If these droids were as useless as you imply, no one would take the time and effort to build them."
"I've seen reports of them in combat," Cardass confirmed. "Against most opponents, they're quite formidable."
"Yet I still see no evidence that these weapons or their masters attacked first,"
Aralani pointed out. "I can only repeat what I said earlier, Admiral," Cardass told her. "The mere act of launching the starfighters was an overt act of aggression. Commander Mithron Yerudo responded in the only way he could to protect his forces."
"Perhaps," Aralani said. "That will be for a military tribunal to decide."
Cardass felt his stomach tighten. "You're bringing him up on charges?"
"That will also be for the tribunal to decide," Thrass said. "But we'll first need to examine the records of the battle and interview the warriors who were present. At this battle, as well as the earlier raid against the Vagari," Aralani added.
"I understand," Cardass said, his heart starting to beat a little faster. Here was the opening he'd been looking for.
"Speaking of the Vagari, my colleagues and I were hoping we could settle the question soon about the treasure we were promised, so that we can be on our way."
Aralani's eyebrows arched.
"Now suddenly you're in a hurry to return home?"
"We're merchants," Cardass reminded her.
"This has been an interesting and productive side trip, but the cargo in our hold is way overdue for delivery."
"A cargo you would very much like to supplement with stolen pirate plunder."
"Yes, but only because our customers will demand late delivery penalties," Cardass explained. "There's no way for us to pay those without the items Captain Kento has requested."
"You should have thought about that before deciding to stay," Thrass said.
"At any rate, the matter of the treasure will have to wait until the tribunal has made its decision. If my brother is found to have violated Chiss military doctrine, he'll have no standing to argue your side of the question."
"I understand," Cardass said heavily. "How long is this hearing likely to take?"
"That depends on how quickly I can collect the details of the two battles," Aralani said. "Once I've done so, I'll request that a tribunal be seated."
"Weeks, in other words. Possibly even months."
"And what will Commander Mithron Yeruido's status be until then?"
"I'll be supervising his operations and overseeing all of his orders," Aralani said. She nodded fractionally at Thrass. "At Syndic Mithrasafis's request."
Cardass looked at Thrass, a prickling sensation on the back of his neck. Once again, Thrawn's analysis had proved right on the mark. "You do this to your own brother?" The muscles in Thrass's cheeks tightened. But it was Aralani who answered.
"Neither Syndic Mithrasafis nor I is unsympathetic toward Commander Mithron Nuruodo," she said evenly. "We wish only to protect him from his own excesses of zeal and ability."
"From his excess of ability?" Cardass snorted.
"That's a new one."
"He's a gifted tactician and commander," Aralani said, "but without proper restraint. He'll eventually go too far and end his days in exile.
What good will those gifts do anyone then?"
"And meanwhile, the Vagari are free to destroy and kill?"
Aralani looked away.
"The lives of other beings are not ours to interfere with, for good or for ill. We cannot and will not trust in whatever feelings of sympathy we might have for the victims of tyranny."
"Then trust in Mithron Yeruido," Cardass urged. "You both agree he's a gifted tactician, and he's convinced that the Vagari are a threat you'll eventually have to face. The longer you wait, the more alien technology and weaponry you let them steal, the stronger they'll be."
"Then that is what we'll face," Thrass said firmly.
and as a syndic of the 8th ruling family, I cannot listen to any more of this. He jabbed a finger at the carnage outside the viewport. Now, describe this battle for us. It had been a long and tiring day, but the last group of droid starfighters had finally been unloaded and deployed across the asteroid's uneven landscape. Now, his growling stomach reminding Doriana of the lateness of the hour, he made his way to the Dark Venge's Supreme Officer's dining room to get something to eat. Cav was already there, seated alone at one of the corner tables, his expression daring anyone to interrupt him. Doriana took the hint and directed the serving droid to one of the tables on the opposite side of the room. He was halfway through his dinner when Cav suddenly stood up and made his way across the room.
"This Mithrado,"
he said, without preamble, as he sat down across from Doriana.
"You think him a genius, do you?"
"I consider him a highly effective military commander and tactician," Doriana said, eyeing the other. "His abilities at art or philosophy, I can't vouch for."
"Amusing," Cav growled. "But he is not even a good tactician. He is instead a fool."
Pulling a datapad from inside his robes, he dropped it on the table in front of Doriana.
"See the reprogramming he has ordered for my starfighters."
Doriana glanced at the datapad's display, covered with droid language symbolics. "I don't read tech," he said. Cav snorted contemptuously.
"He has programmed the starfighters for close approach attacks."
Doriana frowned back at the datapad.
"How close?" "I believe the term is hull skimming," Cav said, tapping the display. "The chief programmer informs me the attack is set for no more than 5 meters above the hull."
Doriana rubbed his cheek thoughtfully. "I don't suppose anyone thought to mention to him that dreadnoughts come with a very good point defense system?"
"The programmers did not think it their place to speak out of turn."
"And neither did you?"
"I?"
Cav feigned innocence.
"You, of all people, should know better than to question the orders of a military genius."
Doriana took a deep breath. "Vice Lord, I strongly suggest you remember our ultimate objective here. We've been sent to destroy outbound flight. Without Mithron Yerudo's aid, we have no chance of doing that."
"Yet a being of his genius is certainly capable of grasping technical readouts,"
Cav said blandly.
"Perhaps his plan is to throw our starfighters against outbound flight in an awesome display of disintegrating metal that will frighten Captain Pakmilu into submission."
"So in the end, all you care about is your pride," Doriana said. "You don't even care if Darth Sidious executes us both, as long as you can find some small point where you can feel superior to Mithron Yerudo."
"Calm yourself, Master Doriana,"
Cav said.
"There is no reason why my pride and my victory cannot coexist."
"Explain."
"I have not told Mithrado of the flaw in his plan," the Vice Lord said with spiteful satisfaction. "But I have instructed the chief programmer to create a secondary attack pattern for the starfighters, which has been overlaid across Mithrado's primary pattern. Once he has wasted the first wave in his foolish close approach attack, I will take command and switch to a more effective line of attack."
Doriana thought it over. "That would probably work," he decided. "It still loses us a full attack wave," he reminded Cav. "Not to mention the element of surprise."
"What surprise?"
Cav scoffed.
"As soon as they see the Dark Venge, they will know to prepare for droid starfighters."
Doriana pressed his fingertips together. "I don't suppose it's occurred to you that Mithron Yerudo might have offloaded the starfighters precisely because he doesn't intend to let Captain Pakmilu see the Dark Venge. That, in fact, he doesn't intend for the Dark Venge to participate in the battle at all."
"That is ridiculous. No military commander would refuse to bring a battleship of our might into his fleet."
Except maybe a commander who's already seen how easily they can be destroyed? Doriana couldn't resist asking. Cav's whole body stiffened.
I perceive that you have come under Mithrador's spell, Master Doriana, he said evenly. But do not be swayed by his learned manner and cultured voice. He is still a primitive savage, and no matter what the outcome, in the end, he will have to die.
Doriana sighed. Regardless, for the moment, we still need him alive. How have you arranged for us to reach this second programming level?
I will have a relay control, Cap said. Once Mithrador's failure is apparent, I will bring the starfighters back under my control, and will complete our mission.
He cocked his head.
Unless you have further objections.
Doriana shook his head.
Though we'll have to make sure we're on his bridge when the battle begins. I leave that to you, Cab said. He is a fool in other areas as well. Did you know he has taken 20 of my starfighters and linked them together by twos with a spare fuel tank between them?
What good does that do? Doriana asked, frowning. Those starfighters run on solid fuel slugs. You're sure they're fuel tanks?
What else could they be?
Cav countered, getting to his feet.
A pleasant evening to you, Master Doriana. There,
Captain Pakmilu said, pointing a flippered hand at the planet visible through D1's bridge viewports.
Roxyuli, our last stop in known space. From this point on, we enter territory never before seen throughout all the ages of Republic star travel.
It's indeed an historic moment, Obi-Wan agreed. With your permission, Captain, I'd like to send a signal to Coruscant through Roxyuli's holonet connection.
Certainly,
Pakmilu said, gesturing aft.
The secure comm room will be at your disposal as soon as our guest is finished.
Obi-Wan frowned. Less than an hour since outbound flight had made orbit, and already they had a guest? Obi-Wan turned and felt his mouth drop open. Their visitor was none other than Supreme Chancellor Palpatine himself.
Master Kenobi,
Palpatine called as he crossed the bridge toward them.
Just the man I need.
This is an unexpected honor, Chancellor Palpatine, Obi-Wan said. May I ask what brings you to this edge of the Republic?
The same thing that moves all of us across the stars these days,
Palpatine replied with a wan smile.
Politics, of course. In this case, trouble between the Roxyuli's central government and the system's asteroid mining colonies.
It must be serious if you had to come out personally, Obi-Wan commented.
Actually, they don't want me at all, Palpatine said dryly. All they want from me is to obtain for them the services of famed negotiator, Master Joris Sabaeth.
Obi-Wan looked at Pakmilu. I'm not sure Master Sabaeth will be interested in the job, he warned Palpatine.
As a matter of fact, he isn't,
the Supreme Chancellor confirmed.
I've already spoken with him, and he flatly refuses to leave outbound flight.
We could delay our departure until his negotiations have finished,
Pakmilu offered. There's no reason we couldn't spend a few days here.
No, I've already suggested that option,
Palpatine said, shaking his head.
He will not change outbound flight's schedule, or leave outbound flight at all, for that matter.
He looked back at Obi-Wan.
But there is another alternative. Perhaps you would be willing to mediate in his place.
Obi-Wan blinked in surprise. With all due respect, Chancellor Palpatine, I don't think that's a substitution that would satisfy them.
On the contrary, Palpatine said. I've just spoken with them, and they would be most gratified if you would lend your assistance.
Very well, Obi-Wan said with a sigh. I presume I'll be bringing my Padawan as well.
You can hardly let him go running off to the next galaxy without you,
Palpatine agreed, the lines smoothing out a bit, and Obi-Wan could sense his relief.
I'll take the two of you down in my ship. After that, I'm afraid I must return to Coruscant, but I'll leave one of my guard and his escort ship
to bring you back when you're finished.
3 days later, after Thrawn had made his report, Cardass was once again standing alone, facing the Admiral. "No," Cardass said firmly, meeting Aurelani's glowing eyes as calmly as he could. "We're not spies. Not for the Republic, not for anyone else."
"Then what precisely did Commander Mithron Nurudo mean by his accusation?"
the Admiral countered.
"And don't deny he said it. I have the sworn statements of the two warriors who were present at the time."
"I don't deny it," Cardass said, his eyes flicking to Thras. The Syndic was standing silently a few steps behind Aurelani, his expression harder even than the Admiral's. Perhaps he knew better than she did what a charge of harboring spies would mean to his brother's career. "But I also can't explain it. Maybe he was trying to confuse the Trade Federation commanders."
"Commanders who have apparently vanished," Aurelani said pointedly, "along with an apparently intact alien warship."
"I don't know anything about that either," Cardass insisted. "All I know is what I've already told you. We're merchants who had a hyperdrive accident and lost our way. Ask the rest of my crew if you don't believe me."
"Oh, I will," Aurelani assured him. "In the meantime, you're confined to your quarters. Dismissed."
Turning, Cardass stalked out of the room. But he didn't go to his quarters. The Chiss warriors were used to seeing him roaming freely around the base, and it hadn't sounded like Aurelani would make any official pronouncements to the contrary until after she'd interrogated Kento and Maris. He had that long to make his escape. The shuttle was still in the slot where he had thought to park it the previous day. There were a few Chiss working in the area, but the time for subterfuge was long past. Striding along like he owned the place, Cardass stepped through the hatchway into the shuttle, sealed it, and headed forward. Within 5 minutes, he had the systems up and running. 5 minutes more, and he had disengaged from the docking clamps and was making his way carefully down the tunnel. No one followed him out. Turning the shuttle onto the proper vector, he hit the hyperdrive control and made the jump to light speed. The next stop, assuming he'd properly programmed in the Springhawk's nav data, would be the alien system where he, Thrawn, and Maris had witnessed the Vagari attack 5 weeks ago. With luck, that campaign would be over. With even more luck, the Vagari would still be there. Six hours later, he emerged from hyperspace to find that the battle was indeed over. There were dozens of Vagari ships orbiting the planet, nestled up to it like carrion avians around a fresh corpse. Most were the bubble-hulled warships they'd seen in the battle. But there were also a number of the civilian transports that had been waiting for the fighting to end. Cardass turned toward the largest of the orbiting warships and headed in. Suddenly, his comm crackled with melodious but evil-sounding alien speech.
"I don't understand your language," Cardass replied in Cybisti. "Do you speak Cybisti?"
The only response was more alien speech.
"How about Minisiat?"
he asked, switching to his newest trade language.
"Can anyone there understand Minisiat?"
There was a short pause.
"State your name, your species, and your intentions,"
the alien voice came back.
"My name is Georges Cardass," Cardass told him. "I'm a human from a world called Corellia."
He took a deep breath. "I'm here to offer you a deal." Cardass was escorted to a starboard docking bay in one of the smaller warships. A group of heavily armed and armored guards was waiting there for him. Short bipeds with large hands, their features hidden by faceplates lavishly decorated to look like fright masks. They took him to a small room loaded with sensor equipment, where he was stripped, searched, and scanned multiple times, his clothing taken away, presumably for similar scrutiny. Afterward, he was taken to another room, this one bare of everything except a cot, and left there alone. 2 hours after he'd been tossed into his cell, the guards returned with his clothing.
They watched him dress, then marched him out and along a corridor to a hatch marked with alien symbols. They nudged him inside and piled in behind him, and a minute later, they were off. The shuttle had no viewports, giving him no clue as to where they were going. But when the hatch opened again, it was to a double row of Vagari soldiers in fancier uniform armor than his captors. He'd expected to be taken someplace small and cramped and anonymous, as befit a proper interrogation. It was therefore a shock when the final blast door opened into a large chamber that rivaled the most elaborate groundside throne rooms he'd ever seen. Against the back wall was a raised dais with an exquisitely decorated chair in the center, occupied by a Vagari clad in a heavy-looking multicolored robe with sunburst shoulder and ankle guards, a serrated cloak back, and no fewer than four separate belts around his waist. Flanking him were a pair of Vagari in only slightly less gaudy robes, advisors or other underlings probably. Lining the walls were other Vagari, some in soldiers' armor, others in what seemed to be civilian clothing and simple face paint. All of them were gazing silently at the prisoner being brought before the throne. Cardass waited until the guards had positioned him 3 meters back from the throne, then bowed low. "I greet the great and mighty Vagari," he began in Minisiat, and was slammed to his hands and knees by a sharp blow across his shoulders.
"You do not speak in the presence of the Miskera until spoken to,"
one of the guards reproved him. Cardass opened his mouth to apologize, caught his near error just in time, and remained silent instead. For a long minute, the rest of the room was quiet too.
"Very good,"
a deep voice came from the dais at last.
"You may rise."
Carefully, tensing for another blow, Cardass stood up.
"I am the Miskera of the Vagari people,"
the Vagari seated on the throne announced.
"You will address me as your eminence. I am told you have the insolence to demand that I bargain with you."
"I make no demands of any sort, your eminence," Cardass hastened to assure him. "Rather, I am in terrible difficulty and came here hoping the great and mighty Vagari people might be willing to come to my assistance. In return for your aid, I hope to offer something you might find of equal value." The Miskera regarded him coolly.
"Tell me of this difficulty."
"My companions and I are merchants from a distant realm," Cardass told him. "Nearly 3 months ago, we lost our way and were taken captive by a race of beings known as the Chiss. We've been their prisoners ever since." A twitter of muted conversation ran around the room.
"Prisoners, you say?"
the Miskera repeated.
"I see no chains of captivity about your neck."
"My apparent freedom is an illusion, your eminence," Cardass said. "My companions are still in Chiss hands, as is our ship. Of equal importance, the Chiss now refuse to release to us some of the spoils of one of their raids. Spoils that we were promised, and that we need to pay off the late fees our customers will demand. Without the treasure, we will face certain death when we reach home."
"Where are your companions being held?"
"At a small base built deep inside an asteroid, your eminence," Cardass said. "The navigational data necessary to locate it is contained in the computer of the vessel in which I arrived."
"And how did you know how and where to find us?"
Cardass braced himself. "Because, your eminence, I was present aboard the Chiss attack cruiser that raided your forces here during your battle of conquest 5 weeks ago." A deadly silence settled over the room.
"You stole one of our shipnets,"
the Miskera said at last. "The commander of the Chiss force did that, yes," Cardass said. The Miskera smiled thinly.
"So you offer to trade your companions and some of our own treasure for nothing more than a chance at revenge?"
"You'd get your shipnet back too," Cardass offered.
"No,"
the Miskera said firmly.
"The offering is insufficient."
Cardass felt his throat tighten. "Your eminence, I beg you."
"Do not beg,"
the Miskera snapped.
"Grubs beg. Inferiors beg. Not beings who would speak and bargain with the Vagari. If you wish us to help you and your companions, you must find more to offer me.
But I have nothing more, Your Eminence. Cardas protested. I swear to you.
Not even those?
The Mascara demanded, pointing over Cardas' shoulder. Cardas turned. Sometime during the conversation, someone had brought in 4 large crates, 2 of them a head taller than him, the others coming only up to his waist. What are those?
They were aboard your transport,
the Mascara said suspiciously.
Do you claim ignorance of them?
I do, Your Eminence, Cardas insisted. I stole the vessel solely to come ask for your help. I never looked to see if there was anything aboard.
Then look now,
the Mascara ordered.
Open the crates and tell me what you see.
Carefully, half expecting to be shot in the back, Cardas made his way back to the crates. The Vagari had already opened all of them, of course, merely setting the front panels loosely back into place. Stepping to one of the smaller boxes, he got a grip on the panel and pulled it off, and caught his breath. Inside, folded up neatly with their arms wrapped around their knees, were a pair of Trade Federation battle droids.
Do you recognize them?
The Mascara asked. Yes, Your Eminence, Cardas confirmed. They're battle droids of a sort used by one of the species in our region of space. The commander also raided a force of those people. This must be part of the spoil of that raid.
What are droids?
Mechanical servants, Cardas said. Some are self-motivated, while others require a centralized computer to give them their instructions.
Show me how it works.
Cardas turned back to the crate, peering inside. There was no sign of a controller or programming console. I don't see the equipment I need to start it up, he said, stepping to the other small box and pulling off the front. There were 2 more folded battle droids inside, and again, no sign of a controller. Each of the 2 larger boxes turned out to contain one of the even deadlier Droidica destroyer droids. Still, no controller. I'm sorry, Your Eminence, but without the right equipment, I can't start them up.
Perhaps this would be of use,
the Mascara suggested. He gestured, and one of the non-armored Vagari watching the proceedings pulled a data pad from beneath his robe. Stepping up to Cardas, he offered it to him. A small ripple of relief washed over some of Cardas's tension. Yes, Your Eminence, it will, he told the Mascara as he looked over the controls. Activator, there. Shall I activate them now, Your Eminence?
Yes.
Bracing himself, Cardas pushed the switch. The result was all he could have hoped for. In perfect unison, the 4 battle droids unfolded themselves halfway, walked forward out of their crates, and then stood up, reaching back over their shoulders and drawing their blaster rifles. The droidicas were even more impressive, rolling forward out of their crates and unfolding into the tripedal battle stances. Around one of them, as if to demonstrate the full range of its capabilities, the faint haze of a shield appeared. And suddenly Cardas realized that there were 12 blasters pointed directly at the dais where the Mascara was seated.
Impressive,
the Mascara said calmly.
Who commands them?
At the moment, whoever is handling the controller, Your Eminence, Cardas said. But I think they can be programmed to obey a specific individual instead.
You will order them to obey me.
Yes, Your Eminence, Cardas said. I'll need you to come down here, though, so that the droids can see you up close. Silently, the Mascara stood up and stalked down the steps, motioning his 2 advisors to stay where they were. He stepped between the 2 droidicas and stopped.
Do it now.
Feeling sweat collecting beneath his collar, Cardas ran through what he hoped was the proper procedure. The 6 droids turned slightly to face the Mascara. Then, to his relief, the battle droids raised their blasters to point toward the ceiling, as the droidicas swiveled a few degrees to point their weapons away from him as well. That should do it, Your Eminence, he said. Of course, they won't be programmed to understand orders given in Minisiat,
You will teach me the proper commands in their language,
the Vagari said.
The first command I wish to know is target. The second is fire.
Yes, Your Eminence. Cardass gave him the two basic words, enunciating them carefully. Perhaps your people can transcribe them phonetically for you, he suggested.
No need,
the Mascara said. He lifted a finger and pointed to Cardass.
Target.
Cardass jerked backward as all six droids swiveled to point their blasters at him. Your Eminence, he breathed.
No,
the Mascara said, his voice silky smooth.
You pronounce the other word.
Cardass swallowed hard. If he'd done this wrong... Fire, he said. Nothing happened.
Excellent,
the Mascara said approvingly.
So you are indeed wise enough not to attempt a betrayal.
He lifted a hand.
Bring me three Jeruns.
Yes, Your Eminence.
One of the soldiers acknowledged and left the room.
Does your commander, Mithron Nuruodo, have more of these machines?
The Mascara asked, turning back to Cardass. Several hundred, at least, Cardass told him. Possibly as many as several thousand. A movement at the door caught his eye, and he turned as three small aliens were herded into the room. Who are these?
Slaves,
the Mascara said offhandedly.
Their pitiful little world is the one currently rolling beneath us. Machines, target.
Cardass stiffened as the droids swiveled toward the three slaves.
Machines, fire.
The salvo from the battle droids' carbines sent the three slaves toppling backward, dead, before they even hit the floor. They were still falling when the fire from the droidicas almost literally cut them in half.
Excellent,
the Mascara said into the shocked silence. Not shocked by the deaths, Cardass knew, but by the display of firepower.
Where do the Chiss keep the others?
The commander will have them at the base, Cardass murmured mechanically, trying without success to force his eyes away from the charred bodies.
Then we will relieve him of them,
the Mascara said, gesturing to one of the advisors.
Order an assault force to be prepared at once.
Outside the Springhawk's bridge canopy, the scattered stars and a small but magnificent globular cluster blazed brilliantly out of a black sky. The stars, the cluster, and nothing else. Surreptitiously, Doriana looked at his chrono. Outbound flight was late. Apparently, the look hadn't been surreptitious enough.
Patience, Master Doriana, Mithron Nuruodo said calmly from the captain's chair. They will come.
They are late,
Vice Lord Cav said, scowling at the back of Mithron Nuruodo's head.
More than 2 hours late.
2 hours is nothing in a voyage of 3 weeks, the commander pointed out reasonably. The only question is whether or not this system is indeed on the correct straight-line path between their last Republic stop and the system where you were preparing to ambush them.
And suddenly, with a flicker of pseudo-motion, there it was, floating in space not 5 kilometers ahead. Outbound flight had arrived.
The device is called a gravity projector, Mithron Nuruodo said. It simulates a planetary mass, thus forcing out any ship whose hyperspace vector crosses its shadow.
Really? Doriana said, trying to sound calm. To the best of his knowledge, no one in the Republic had ever figured out how to turn that particular bit of hyperspace theory into an actual working device. The fact that the Chiss had solved the problem sent discomforting ramifications ricocheting across his mind. Cav, predictably, wasn't nearly as interested in such long-term thought.
Then they are in our hands, he all but crowed. All forces, attack!
Hold, Mithron Nuruodo said. I give orders aboard this ship, Vice Lord Cav.
It is our mission, Commander Mithrado,
Cav countered.
And as we debate, we lose the precious element of surprise.
Fishing into his robes, he pulled out a comm activator.
You and your ships may do as you wish.